Stop trying to make fetch happen.
Dun, 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 dun.
That can't be our intro.
I know, but it'd be funny.
Hello and welcome to It's the Greatest Show, Man, the podcast where we talk about the musicals you love and why they're great and why they suck. I am your host, Emily Chavone, and with me as always is my co-host, Brantley Wheeler.
That was so fetch.
Stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen. You know, they say that every high school has a Regina George. And if you think your high school didn't have a Regina George, it was you.
Right.
And that makes me wonder.
About yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I was a Regina George. I don't think I was cool enough to be Regina George. But I also didn't hang out with any of the cool kids to get their attention. And I think maybe you can speak to this too, but being at a small high school, it, like, everyone knows everyone.
Yeah,
like, I knew everyone from, like, kindergarten just about. So, like,
right. Well, I mean, I went to a really small high school, but I didn't start going there until I was, I mean, in the district, I wasn't there until I was in eighth grade. So I was a new kid then, and then I just kind of fell into it and was fine. Yeah. And I honestly don't know if we had a Regina George. I was a Katie Heron for a bit, but like,
You were Katie Heron?
A little bit.
Oh, because you were the new kid.
I was the new kid and like, didn't have any friends and all that stuff. Just for a little bit. But I don't remember us really having a Regina George per se. I mean, there was like, they were definitely the group of students that was like, these are the popular kids and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know anyone who was a Regina George, or at least not outwardly.
Yeah. I think I agree with that. I'm trying to, like, there were some girls that like were like, there were some girls who were like the cheerleaders. I guess those would be the popular girls.
Yeah.
But again, like when you know everyone like your whole life, it's hard to say that someone is like a mean, like, you know, a Regina George in that way. There wasn't someone who like manipulated the entire student body into doing whatever they wanted.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, by the way.
We're talking about Mean Girls, by the way.
Today's show is Mean Girls.
Yeah.
The musical. And I feel like we should clarify, we're not discussing either of the films today.
No.
Not wholly. I'm gonna reference the musical movie, maybe, a little bit, but we're focusing on the Broadway show.
Yes. So if you came here to hear what on the movie... Sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe another time.
Not going to happen. Yeah, maybe we'll cover the movie musical
separately
someday. But we've covered a lot of movies this season, kind of unintentionally.
Have we? Oh, Sound of Music, Mary Poppins, yeah.
Grease, Mary Poppins, Sound of Music, Reefer Madness, Journey to Bethlehem. Like, we're supposed to pick one movie, and we did a lot just by chance. So we're not going to talk about this one.
Yeah. Well, but one of those is exclusively a movie.
Yes. And
that was kind of
the rest of them have a lot.
Yeah.
There were so many. I felt like every time we were prepping an episode, I was like, I have to watch six versions of this.
I definitely felt that way about Grease, Sound of Music, and Mary Poppins for sure. It was a lot from those.
Yeah, so I'm glad to not.
Which is why they're like our longest episodes.
They're so long. Well, actually, I think Merrily is still the longest episode at like 3.5 hours.
Right.
But
and we only watched one version of that.
I know. That's not true. I watched two.
Well, you watched the actual stage production on Broadway.
I saw it on Broadway.
Right.
Anyway,
I just saw that one in London. But anyway.
Well, and
all right, OBC. Mean Girls.
Mean Girls.
On Wednesdays, we wear pink.
It's not Wednesday. It's Tuesday.
On Tuesdays, we wear blue.
On Tuesdays, yeah. You can't see it, but we're both happen to be wearing blue today.
Ironically.
Unplanned. So it goes. So anyway, Mean Girls.
Mean Girls.
I'm really excited to hear your thoughts on this. And I think
maybe
I have some unpopular opinions. Okay. So we'll see.
I'm sure I have basic opinions, but we'll go ahead and find out.
So let's start with some production info.
Okay.
Mean Girls is a stage musical based on the 2004 film Mean Girls by Tina Fey and the 2002 book Queen Bees and Wannabes by Rosalind Wiseman. The musical features music by Jeff Richmond, lyrics by Nell Benjamin, and a book by Tina Fey. It had a pre-Broadway tryout at the National Theater in Washington, D.C. in the fall of 2017 before opening on Broadway on April 8th, 2018 at the August Wilson Theater. It was nominated for 12 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, but failed to win any. It closed March 11th, 2020, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, after a total of 833 performances, and it did not reopen. It is now licensable by schools and amateur groups, and as of 2023, was the 10th most produced high school musical in the U.S.
Oh, well, I didn't know that one. That's cool.
Yeah.
But also, doesn't really surprise me, because, like, everyone who grew up watching this movie
is now a high school theater teacher.
Yeah. Millennials.
I remember when they announced the rights, mm-hmm. it was when we were getting ready to do Mamma Mia, and I was waiting on some line change requests from our admin. I was waiting on our rep to get back to us from MTI, and then the rights came out for Mean Girls, and I distinctly remember we were painting the stage for Radium Girls. And I was like, do I need to change what show we're doing? Like, we should do Mean Girls instead.
Right.
And I'm glad I didn't, but I do hope that someday we have the right group of kids come along so we could do Mean Girls, because I think that would be really fun.
Yeah, I think so.
I think the kids would like it, and I think it would sell well.
Oh, I think for sure, with all their millennial parents.
Yeah. Hey, millennials.
Hi, millennial parents. Come see Mean Girls.
How many millennials have teenagers?
I know a few.
I mean,
I have an almost teenager.
You have an almost teenager. I guess that's reasonable. What year starts millennials? 1980? 82?
You're gonna make me look stuff up.
I wasn't going to make you look stuff up. I was just hoping you knew.
I think it's 86.
No, surely it's earlier 81. Than that. 81
okay. to 96.
So, would you like a summary?
I would love a summary.
Great. It's kind of long.
Go for it.
But I didn't know how to shorten it more than this. Act 1. Katie Heron is the new girl at North Shore High School in the suburbs of Chicago. She's spent most of her life living in Kenya and being homeschooled by her parents, who are researchers, and she struggles to adjust to public school in the States. She meets Janice and Damien, the artsy loners who don't fit into traditional cliques and also serve as narrators for the show. They offer to be Katie's surrogate friends and guide her through high school life until she finds her social group. Katie quickly attracts the attention of the Plastics, Regina George, Gretchen Wieners, and Karen Smith, the popular hot girls, and is invited to eat lunch with them. Janice and Damien encourage Katie to infiltrate the Plastics group and tell them everything that is said, but do not explain why they hate the popular girls so much. Later in AP Calculus, Katie, who is incredibly good at math, falls for the dreamy senior Aaron Samuels and impresses head of mathletes Kevin Napoor with her math skills. She is discouraged by Regina from joining the mathletes, as it would be, quote, social suicide, and also learns from Gretchen that Aaron is Regina's ex-boyfriend and therefore off limits. At Regina's house, Katie learns about the burn book in which the Plastics paste photos and write mean comments about their classmates. She finds Janice's picture and learns from Regina that the two used to be friends in middle school, but had a falling out when Regina couldn't invite Janice to her birthday party. As time passes, Katie, still crushing on Aaron, decides to play dumb at math in order to get him to tutor her. She also gets invited to his Halloween party, where the jealous Regina manipulates Aaron into getting back together in order to hurt Katie's feelings. After the party, Katie cries to Janice and Damien about what has happened and learns that the real reason Regina and Janice are no longer friends is because Regina accused Janice of being a lesbian and their classmates bullied Janice into leaving school. They develop a plan to get revenge on Regina by cutting her off from all her friends, breaking off her relationship with Aaron by telling him she's cheating on him, and tricking her into eating calteen bars until she gains enough weight that her clothes don't fit. Katie is crowned the new queen bee by the girls of the school. Act 2.
Oof.
Katie is becoming just as bad as all the other girls by being obsessed with her appearance and social media, and it is annoying Janice and Damien. Gretchen and Karen convince Katie to throw a party while her parents are out of town to try to get Aaron's attention. The party, of course, gets out of control quickly, and Katie loses Aaron's respect when she drunkenly tells him she's been pretending to be dumb for his attention. She also has a falling out with Janice and Damien, as she missed Janice's art show to throw this house party. Meanwhile, Regina learns that the calteen bars are not diet bars and are causing her to gain weight, so she decides to get revenge by photocopying the burn book and distributing it throughout the school, but not before adding a picture of herself labeled Fugly Cow so as to take the blame off herself. The junior girls fight like wild animals at a watering hole, and the staff stage an intervention to get them to calm down and apologize. While many of the girls share personal stories and do apologize, Regina and Katie do not. Janice reveals to everyone that she orchestrated the whole friendship between Regina and Katie and empowers all the girls to be themselves instead of conforming to societal norms. Regina leaves in anger and Katie follows to apologize, but Regina is hit by a bus. The best plot twist in all of history.
Oh, it's so funny.
Shocked, Katie decides to falsely confess to writing the entire burn book herself and, as punishment, gets suspended from school and is not allowed to attend the spring fling dance. She's also required to join the Mathletes to get extra credit for playing dumb in calculus. The Mathletes win the state championship and sneak into the dance where Katie is crowned spring fling queen. She decides to break the plastic crown into pieces and share it with everyone, and they all live happily ever after the end.
Yay.
With songs.
With songs and singing. Because if there's no singing, what's the point?
Truthfully. Actually, that's a great segue, because I have always loved this property. Mm-hmm. Like, from the time the movie first came out, I don't think I saw the movie in theaters. I was a little young to go see it in 2004. Mm-hmm. And I don't watch a lot of movies even now, but this one, when I was a kid, like, anytime it was on TV, even if it was most of the way through, I would sit down and watch it. I've just always liked it. I thought it was funny. It's like comfort film, cult classic. Mm-hmm. If I ever have kids, I can't wait till they're old enough so that I can force them to watch it with me. So when I heard they were making a musical, I was pumped, like so excited. Mm-hmm. And I followed it very closely throughout, like from the announcement until it went and did the out-of-town tryout in DC, and then it was coming to Broadway. And I may or may not have, but definitely did hear audio bootlegs that came out of DC, and I loved it. I was so excited. And this was right around the time when I was reevaluating my life choices and deciding I wanted to go to grad school to become a theater teacher. So this was one of the shows that kind of got me excited about theater again. Because I think I've maybe mentioned this on the podcast before, but I did a musical theater undergrad program. Like, I have a bachelor's in musical theater, and then I worked for a little bit as a stage manager, and I was just, like, burned out by my program, and I felt really disenfranchised by the places I'd worked, so I kind of just left theater altogether and decided that I made a mistake, and I started a second career in the medical field. And when this show was doing its out-of-town tryout was when I was kind of realizing that that wasn't going to work out for me either. So this was like part of, as I was thinking about it, this was part of like what got me back into theater and musicals in particular.
I didn't think I knew that. I mean, I knew that you had left and stopped doing the theater thing for a while, but I didn't know that this was the show that brought you back.
It just like kind of happened to be all at the same time. So I remember I'm trying to think of other shows that I knew about that were going on. Because 2016, like, that was Dear Evan Hansen and Great Comet and Come From Away. And like, I knew some of those things, mm-hmm. but I was pretty neutral about all that. And then in fall 2017, I started getting excited about this, and then spring 2018. And that was when I had like just changed jobs so that I could pursue grad school. And I was studying to take the GRE so I could get into my graduate program. And like, I remember sitting at work doing like GRE prep books and also listening to the Mean Girls bootleg. So yeah, this was all at the same time.
That's cool.
Then it opened in April 2018, and they released the cast recording at the end of May. And I also remember distinctly like sitting at work and being like, on my way home, I get to listen to this cast album. I'm so excited. And I was bummed. I didn't think the cast album was very good.
Really?
At least not compared to my expectations based on the bootleg. Mostly it wasn't like production or acting or anything. They had changed a bunch of the lyrics.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that a little bit more later, but I thought some of the original lyrics were better, and it kind of changed the story a little, and I didn't super love that. But I was still rooting for it at the Tony Awards, because it was my favorite show that year that was nominated for things, and it was nominated for 12 Tony Awards.
Yeah.
It was nominated for Best Musical, Best Actress in a Leading Role for Taylor Lautner, Best Actor in a Featured Role for Gray Henson, Best Actress in a Featured Role for Ashley Park, Best Book of a Musical, Best Original Score, Scenic Design, Costume Design, Sound Design, Direction, Choreography, and Orchestrations. And it won nothing.
Wow. That's the craziest thing to me about this, is that it didn't win anything.
In a year where it was all movie adaptations.
Yeah.
Because that year was The Band's Visit, Frozen, SpongeBob, and this.
Mm-hmm.
And while we, you know, hindsight's 2020, we know The Band's Visit swept everything.
Right.
Just about.
Yeah.
I think Frozen won a couple and SpongeBob won a couple as well.
Yeah.
But to be like, all of these are adaptations and not of, I mean, The Band's Visit, I guess, is your like thoughtful artsy piece. But like Frozen and SpongeBob and Mean Girls, I would say are probably all in the same caliber of like popular movies that people really like.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Especially, I mean, Frozen and Mean Girls for sure. The SpongeBob musical is kind of its own thing. It's just, it's inspired by, but not based on any direct adaptation. It's just like, oh, it's a, the characters from SpongeBob, but they're not.
Right.
You know, it doesn't follow a specific like SpongeBob movie plot or anything like that.
Right.
But then again, yes, they are all based off of known properties, properties that already exist or films that already existed.
Right. So I really thought that all of these were kind of going to be on the same caliber, except for the fact that as we talked about, what episode did we talk about this on? Oh, it was, we talked about in Starlight Express. If you want to hear our thoughts about how American theater honors thoughtful high art pieces, go listen to Starlight Express again. But
yeah, I mean, if you want to.
It's my favorite episode, so go listen to it. Even though it's my least favorite show.
Right.
Anyway, but for it to be nominated against those other three, you know, I thought for sure like Band's Visit would probably win like best musical, and anytime there's a drama, I feel like that's Tony bait, particularly if the drama is about like not a straight white person. So, and that's not a, that's not meant to be a critique on anything, just like I, those things are just more likely to win.
Yeah.
So, which is fine. So I wasn't expecting it to win all the awards, but for it to win none of the awards, I was really disappointed because I thought it was pretty good. Like, certainly on the same caliber as SpongeBob and Frozen, but
right.
It, I do understand looking back how it, it's of the three, SpongeBob, Frozen, Mean Girls. Mean Girls is the most straightforward adaptation, and right, it doesn't have the, like, like SpongeBob is, has got found objects and there's some creativity in the way it's presented, and Frozen has got the big spectacle of the Disney machine. So I understand. Aside from Tony Awards, it did win Outstanding Book of a Musical at the Drama Desk Awards. It won Outstanding Book of a Musical at the Outer Critics Circle Awards, and at the Chita Rivera Awards, it won Outstanding Ensemble. So it, it's, and it was nominated for a lot of other things along the way. So I think like it's clear that they were doing good work here, just other things were chosen to win the award instead, which, what do the awards mean anyway?
Right.
Because this show ran longer than all of the other three.
Surprisingly to me, yes. Surprisingly, yes. Not that I think the other shows are bad in any way, but I just think that the popularity of this film is what led to its longevity by a lot. I mean, like, the SpongeBob musical is interesting, but it leans more towards like a younger audience, skews younger, versus like, and Frozen does as well because it's Frozen, but Mean Girls is more appealing to people like our age, millennials and even like Gen Xers, Gen Z, than the other properties because they feel more childlike. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I do enjoy both of those other shows, but Mean Girl is the more grown-up show of those three.
Agreed, and then if you factor The Band's Visit in as well, The Band's Visit doesn't have the name recognition.
No, correct, yeah.
So I think the Tony Awards in this case did not reflect the like demographics of who's buying tickets on Broadway. And I don't know very many people who are dropping Broadway ticket prices for small children.
Right.
I think the people who are going to bring their kids to New York City to see a show are probably spending those dollars on The Lion King.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I would think so.
Frozen, maybe.
Maybe Wicked.
I mean, when did Frozen close?
When did Frozen close?
Did Frozen close at in March 2020 also?
Something like that. Let me.
I think it might have closed before then.
March 11th, 2020.
Okay, so they both closed at the same time.
Right, around the same time, yeah. Well, a lot of things closed around around that time.
Yeah, yeah. I thought maybe for a minute that Frozen closed before Mean Girls, or maybe Frozen announced that they wouldn't be reopening before Mean Girls did, because I suspect had the pandemic not happened, Mean Girls would have run a lot longer.
I think I would agree with that.
I think the millennial wine moms on their bachelorette trip or whatever to New York City were going to see it. And having seen the tour when it came through our area, there were a lot of people wearing pink and drinking wine in the audience and having a great time.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
No, it was exactly the type of experience you would expect. So in that sense, I do think this adaptation works really well. Yeah. And then, like, now there's a school version. I'm excited about that, too.
Yeah,
so
for sure. It's really exciting.
What's your history with Mean Girls as a property?
So my history with Mean Girls as a property, it came out, in 2008, right?
Four.
2004. Okay. Uh-huh. So right when I was kind of getting in, I was in high school when this came out. And I remember it being like a big deal, how much people loved this movie. Cause I mean, back then too, Lindsay Lohan was a very big draw for a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah. She was huge.
And yeah. And so, I remember when it came out and like every girl that I knew had seen it. And I always felt very clearly movies like that are not geared towards me.
That's fair.
As far as like, right. As a straight white male, it's not necessarily geared towards me, but I don't have a problem watching teen dramas or like teen comedies and chick flicks, things like that. I never really minded that much because I just like movies. If a movie's good, I'll go see it. Mm. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been to the movies and seen rom-coms I really didn't care to see. But there's a few I enjoy. And while this is not that, it's not a rom-com. I remember watching it. I believe I watched it with my sister and my cousins. And I remember really liking it. It's very funny.
Yeah.
And I remember being surprised at how much I liked it just because I'm like, oh, this movie's not really geared towards me. But it's very, very good. And I've always enjoyed it. And I don't necessarily believe that I would seek it out to watch it on my own. But if I happened to be like flipping the channels and like Mean Girls was on, I'd be like, yeah, I'll watch Mean Girls. It's fun. I like this movie. But that's kind of my history with it. I have seen it multiple times. I will admit, I have not seen this as much as Legally Blonde because my sister, like Legally Blonde was like her favorite movie for a really long time. So I've seen Legally Blonde a lot, but I haven't seen this as many times. But I do really enjoy it, and I enjoy a lot like how much it more or less sticks to its source material as we go through the musical. I can really appreciate a lot of that. And I can make some more comments about that as we kind of talk more about it, unless you want me to just talk about it now.
Yeah, you can just talk about it now if you want to.
Okay. I think it was very, like, obvious. Like, the smartest thing that they did with this musical is that they brought Tina Fey back in to just write it.
So good.
Such a good idea. Because, like, she wrote the movie. She just adapted it to a musical. And that was such a great idea. And they kept another really smart thing they did was they kept all of the iconic moments.
Yeah.
You go Glenn Coco.
Yeah. The perfect amount of fan service.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Damien.
She doesn't even go here.
Damien being like, they keep saying he's too gay to function like Danny DeVito, I love your work. Like those are tiny little things that mean nothing to the entire plot, but people just love that so much. And so including it was the way to go, I think.
Absolutely. I would definitely agree with that. And, I mean, like I said, I've not been living under a rock. I'm very familiar with this movie and the plot shut up, I didn't say anything, all that kind of stuff. Like, I get all the references. I did see an article earlier when I was looking up things for Mean Girls and said that Mean Girls was dubbed the most quotable movie of all time by our generation.
Oh, I quote it all the time, knowing that kids don't get the references.
But we get it, and that's what's funny.
But that's what's important, is that I understand and it's funny to me.
Right. Right. I'd say for my high school experience, that was not the most quoted movie, but it is definitely if anyone our age, if you say a line from that movie, they can probably finish it. Like, it's an iconic film, especially for our generation. And I definitely understand your excitement when it was being turned into a musical, for sure. And I'm honestly surprised at how well it works, considering that this could have been a disaster. But I think it's a testament to the writing of the original film and of this adaptation that lends itself to its success.
I actually am not surprised that it did well, given the creative team.
Fair.
So, like, obviously having Tina Fey back, But then Tina Fey's husband, Jeff Richmond, right. is the one who did right. the music and worked on other things. And like in TV in particular, is like worked on other projects with her and like in that mm-hmm. realm, like being heavily involved with Saturday Night Live and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt and like movies like Baby Mama mm-hmm. and Whiskey Tango Foxtrot and then like Mean Girls. Of mm-hmm. course, and he worked on the 2023 production. Oh, he played Horace Vandergelder.
Oh, okay.
In Hello Dolly in 2023, which is cool. But then, like, Nell Benjamin, lyricist, who is married to and the collaborator to Lawrence O'Keefe, mm-hmm. who wrote Legally Blonde, and Heather's, like, these are all, and it's funny that you brought up Legally Blonde, because to me, these are both, Legally Blonde and Mean Girls are both really good musical mm-hmm. adaptations of a film and also secret guilty pleasures. I unabashedly love both of those shows, which I guess people wouldn't expect from me given my snooty Sondheim vibes.
What do you mean?
But I think like knowing who was working on this piece, I think they all clearly knew what they were doing, and some properties maybe don't lend themselves to becoming musicals, but this one absolutely does. Mm-hmm. And with the addition of Casey Nicola, who is the most underrated director choreographer potentially of all time.
Yeah, I mean,
do you not love all his work?
No, I mean,
I love him so much.
I mean, if you want to talk about like Broadway icons that are not actors, mm. Casey Nicola's got to be up there for sure.
It hurts my heart so much that I feel like Casey Nicola should be a household name, although what musical theater stuff is household names? But
fair.
I just love his work so much, and his work is one of the things that's really pushed me as a, granted, I'm in educational theater, right. but to be a director and choreographer, and to see how those two things should, like, can and should be seamless, mm-hmm. really pushes me to not use an outside choreographer. I mean, the last three musicals we worked on, I've had help from someone along the way. Two of them I've had help from staff members, and then one of them I took on a student to choreograph some of it. So I felt like, in educational theater, you have to take whatever help you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I do think it's important to be collaborative. And when I'm doing 1,000 other things, it's really nice to just not have to worry about it.
Right, for sure.
But also, as a creative, I want to have control over things, and I want things to feel seamless. And unless you have a perfect partnership with someone, styles are going to just not line up always the way you want them to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. People like Casey Nicola inspire me to do more. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, his choreography is so good.
It's very, very good. I was really, I really enjoyed the choreography in this one.
Perfect, like, he's so good at so many styles, but it's he's so good at perfectly encapsulating whatever show. And I feel like in this case, it was the perfect mishmash of like Broadway and also like kind of hip hop inspired contemporaries. I just loved it.
Yeah, definitely.
The scene in the cafeteria with the tables and the lunch trays, it's inspired,
it's so,
truthfully.
That's probably some of the best choreography I've seen in a modern
so
Broadway show.
It's so simple and it's so good.
Yes. Simple but effective is one of my favorite things.
Mwah, 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 mwah. Delicious.
I will say that this does have very clearly has a lot of like modern pop influence mixed with Broadway, more so than... while it is impressive, the choreography in Once Upon a One More Time is too much like 2000s pop. It just kind of gets lost in the weeds, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's so complex as compared to this, which is obviously very complex, but is deceptively simple in some ways.
Yeah.
Like, especially with like when they're dancing with the trays in the cafeteria during, what's that number called?
Where do you belong?
Yeah, during Where Do You Belong? Yeah, that's like, it's very, very impressive. And just like, and just to talk about some of that technical, like just the direction of that as well, where like, there's just the four tables, but the ensemble rotates those tables. And when they do, they're changing costumes in the background.
Yeah.
So that the audience's focus is on the front two tables while they're in the background changing. It's so impressive. I'm so cool.
It's so good that when I saw it on tour, I knew that was going to happen, and I intentionally wanted to pay attention to the scene changes, and I couldn't because it just pulled my focus right where I was supposed to be looking.
Yeah.
That's how good Casey Nicola is.
It's
I'm trying to cheat the system, and I can't.
Yeah, it's so good. Like, no notes.
No notes, absolutely not. And what I also love about it is that as someone who could potentially produce this at a high school and direct choreograph it at a high school, I know my kids are watching the same slime tutorial we watched,
mm-hmm.
and they're gonna want it to look like that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like his choreography in many ways is not too complex that the kids couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But also the things that maybe are out of reach could be modified very easily to give a similar or the same effect and still look really good.
Agreed.
I did a workshop, it was a couple of years ago now. It was for theater teachers, and we did like a little choreography workshop, and the person leading the workshop was talking about ways that you can take this dance move and modify it to make it easier. And that's what I think of when I watch his choreographies. Like, it would be so easy to just make slight modifications to make it more accessible for people, and no one would notice.
Yeah,
and I love
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Casey Nicola, please adopt me. How do you feel about the choice to make Janice and Damien narrators? Because they do open the show.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
I feel like if you're going to choose any character or characters to play that role, they're the ones you go with. I think that I know that in the movie, Katie is the one that narrates it for the most part.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't want this to come off in the wrong way, but it feels almost too Shakespearean for the actor to narrate themselves, if that makes sense. Because it feels like too many asides coming and turning to the audience. They're like, I'm going to talk about my story. Then they turn in.
Gotcha.
And then they're talking about themselves, and they turn and have this interaction. Versus if someone else is doing it, I feel like that's a, I don't know, I like that choice better than if Katie were to narrate it herself. Because they're talking about her instead of Katie talking about herself.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I like their singing, like anytime Cautionary Tale comes up, I think it's funny.
Mm-hmm, for sure. It's like people died, nobody died.
No one died.
No one died. That's a funny one. I like that bit too. And that's how Regina George died. She didn't die.
Yeah.
It's just funny.
Yeah. I also think in general, people get very protective over the things they love when they're adapted into other things, which we've also talked about a little bit this season. I personally feel that the changes that were made for stage work really well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a thing that I miss from the movie that's not on stage. Like, they've kind of modernized the sensibilities. Maybe modernized is the wrong word, because here we are again, more than 5 years removed from this piece. It was almost 15 years removed from the original film.
Mm-hmm.
By the time it hit Broadway, it was 14 years anyway. So I don't, like, there's very little, the stuff that I think of, like, when they're like, oh, we need to modernize it. Like, we don't include everyone, like, constantly on their cell phone.
Right.
That's a thing that comes up. I saw a tour of Legally Blonde a couple years ago where they tried to make the Greek chorus, like, always mm-hmm. on FaceTime. And I thought that's stupid. Like, we can put things in the time period that they were made, but also I don't feel like Mean Girls is kind of set in a specific time period.
Yeah.
Based on this musical, it kind of gives itself the freedom to be a little bit broader.
Right. I'm glad you brought this up, because this is actually something that I made a note about.
Okay.
I feel like that the updates that they've made to kind of modernize it, yeah. at least for the time period, were actually fairly appropriate, because there are times where they're using their phones they're using modern slang, like slang yeah. high school students would use, at least around the time when this came out. And I felt like that actually, it didn't feel forced. It mm-hmm. actually felt fairly natural to do that. Even like on the LED screens, they were showing like social media posts and like Twitter posts and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, this actually works. It's obviously obviously different from the original source material, but it worked well enough to where it didn't detract anything for me. I just was like, oh, okay, so they've just kind of modernized it a bit, because the story is still relatable. Doesn't matter really how old you are. The story of this that they tell in this, you know, production is relatable, no matter who's telling it, for the
Agreed.
Most part.
Agreed. And I don't think that they've kind of shoehorned themselves into 2018 either.
No, I don't. I would agree.
The updates allow for it to progress with time. I mean, I'm sure some things are going to become out of date as time goes on.
Sure.
Like, I'm trying to think in It Roars at one point, like when she first walks in the school and all the kids are not paying attention to her and they're staring at their phones. Mm-hmm. One girl's like, unsubscribe.
Right.
Like, she's trying to get her attention and the girl says that. I don't think that's going to like lock itself into a time period.
I don't think so either. I will say this though. So I didn't watch the full movie, and we're not really going to talk about the Mean Girls musical film.
Uh-huh.
But I did watch a specific number from the film. I watched Sexy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it popped up on YouTube as I was researching the movie, or researching the musical, rather. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'll watch this. And it actually, like, I don't know if I should send it to you or not. But basically, it starts out with Karen essentially doing like a TikTok video where she's like talking, and it's vertical, like it would be on a phone. And she does the very beginning where she's like, world peace, maybe world peace should be first. Let me start over. And basically just makes a new video and does it. And I felt like that was almost a too far step in that modernization direction.
Yeah.
To where it was like, because she starts singing the song, and then like all these other video screens of other girls in the school pop up, and they're all talking about they're like dressing up for Halloween and doing all this other stuff. It's also just way funnier. Well, I mean, Kate Rockwell is just awesome in this. She's my favorite actor in this whole show. Like, I really enjoy watching her. But I feel like the actor who's in the movie, who I don't know her name. Let me look it up real quick. Avantika Vandanapu. I think her performance is good, but it's just something about the film. I just really didn't like that version of the song. But I don't think it's necessarily her. I think it's the direction.
I just watched 1 minute and 15 seconds of it, and I think that was enough. I haven't watched this movie because I heard bad things about it, and also was saving it for this episode just in case we got to it, and then we decided not to talk about it, which is fine. This is in that phase of movie musicals where we had to trick people into thinking it wasn't a musical in order to see it, and also that for whatever reason, this belief we couldn't have musical theater style music in a musical theater film.
Right, yeah.
Which, again, we're on the other side of the Wicked movie being out and getting amazing reviews, and also why are we talking about this when we could be going to see the Wicked movie? But yeah, it feels like very overproduced, and like we have to sing like little babies. Like, even Billie Eilish wouldn't sing musical theater like this.
I don't think so.
But it sounds like we have to do sweet, like, soft little baby voices and not do a full Broadway belt.
Yeah, I don't understand that really either. But I feel like modernized, like, to kind of bring it back all in here, I feel like there is an appropriate way to kind of modernize this for the time period, but I feel like it just was a step too far from what I've seen in the film.
Mm.
Also, Taylor Lautman over Renee Rapp, and I will not fight you on it. That is just how it is.
I like them both.
I like them both as all. I don't get me wrong. I also like them both, but for different reasons. And I think, I just think Taylor Lautman, I just like her a little bit better.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, not sorry.
I think I will really dislike the Mean Girls musical movie, but not because of Renee Rapp, and I've seen Renee Rapp perform.
Mm-hmm.
Regina George on stage, or, you know, clips of her. I didn't see it live.
Right, yeah.
And I think Renee Rapp is great. And this just doesn't do her justice. Probably, again, haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fine.
Right.
That's a minute 15 I'll never get back.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I will say, after I watched that one song, I was like, I'm glad I didn't watch this movie. I'd just be on it the whole time.
Me
and
too.
And we can do that later.
I watched Revenge Party. Which we'll get mm-hmm. to.
Okay. I do want to say, if we talk a little bit about the music, I just really like the music in the show.
Yeah.
There's not really a song I don't like. Every song is really, really great. I think if I had to pick one that I don't really love, it's probably I See Stars. I'd say that's
what I was going to say.
Yeah. I think that's the song I'm just kind of like, well, it's, I understand the purpose of the song. I just don't love it. I think of the entire soundtrack, it's the weakest.
I agree. I also don't think Fearless is particularly good. To me, it feels like the songs that are about like female empowerment
mm-hmm.
don't come off quite as genuine as the other songs. And I can't really put my finger on why,
mm-hmm.
but those songs feel a little bit fake and a little bit forced to me.
Yeah, I feel, well, personally, I feel like I can't really comment considering I can't, it's not geared towards me. I'm not,
yeah,
I'm all about girl power, but girl power doesn't apply to me necessarily. But I mean, I think I would agree. It's interesting to me that the two weakest songs in the show are the act one closer and the finale of the show. It's almost kind of like it doesn't peter out as badly as Little Mermaid does. Little Mermaid just fizzles and falls apart at the end. This doesn't do that. It does have a satisfying ending, but I know it's the ending of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in here? I just don't love it. Also, why does every movie about high school end in a dance? Every movie in high school is like, we have to have a dance. Even Spider-Man Homecoming ends in a dance. Like,
does Heather's end in a dance?
I think Heather's ends with everybody dead for the most part.
Well, there's one.
fair enough. And I guess Breakfast Club also does not end in a dance. But I mean, like, more like, but Footloose does. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, Footloose is about dancing. That's the
but
whole
Footloose
show.
Is about dancing. So that makes sense. But anyway, this just was like, maybe as I was watching that was kind of the observation that I made. Well, it's obviously not true, but I'm like,
yeah,
it's just like, does it have to end in a dance?
Yes. But because then everyone can wear a formal costume and look so pretty at curtain call.
And we need to make sure that Regina George is in a full spinal brace.
Oh gosh, the halo.
That's so funny. So funny. And I gotta say, watching Taylor Lautner dance in that is way funnier than it should have been. Because like, there's a part in the choreography where they're all dancing and they all turn and like turn their heads and look at each other, and she has to fully turn her whole body, and I cackled.
That's funny.
I cackled, which I'm like, this character is disabled right now. I shouldn't laugh, but it's very funny. And I love that she puts the bow on the halo.
Mm.
I think that's in the movie too, but it's really funny. Oh, and I also want to say too that, especially in Act One, they put a lot of like African undertone in all of Katie's songs. I thought that's really cool.
Mm, yeah, it's you can tell which characters are featured based on the style and instrumentation.
Mm-hmm.
Though it does still feel like one cohesive piece.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I just really, and I love the callbacks they do to all of that as well. Where there's like, in Act Two, where Katie kind of like has a dream where she, like a daydream where she's fighting Regina. And it has all like the lighting, everything changes to the Africa lighting. So like, they're all fighting each other like animals. And then it cuts back to her just standing there. It's just really, it's so smart. There's a lot of really good stuff in this show that, like, I don't really have a ton of bad stuff to say about this whole thing. I really enjoyed watching it, but I do feel like overall that I just really wasn't that impressed by it at the end of the day. And I feel like it's because I knew it was going to happen already because I've seen the movie. If that makes any sense.
Well, you're wrong.
I mean,
your opinions
that,
are bad and you should
feel
bad.
Yeah, well, fine. But I don't know. It's just like, like I said, I really enjoyed the music for sure. And, you know, it is a very like girl power show.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, there's something about it. I was like, there's a lot of like very technically impressive things that happened. Carrie Butler doesn't look the same in any role.
I know, isn't she
great?
But
she plays three different roles in the show. And it's really impressive. And like, there's a lot of stuff I like. Like I said before, Kate Rockwell just knocks it out of the park. It's like my favorite person to watch in this whole show. She's so funny. Great comedic timing. And I also really like the character of Mr. Duval. He's probably my second favorite character in the show. I don't know why. Just like, I guess it's just big dad energy.
I think maybe it's because we're adults and we have to deal with this type of attitude all the time. And fair. You're just like, yeah, relatable.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. A lot of his stuff was very funny as well. I will, like, the only time I, like, really laughed out loud was during Sexy.
Really?
Yeah, really. And it's just her delivery of the three-word line. It's so funny. I can be a sexy doctor and cure sexy cancer.
Oh.
And then she's like, sexy, I can sexy cure cancer. They're like, no. She's like,
no.
Cure sex cancer? That's not a thing.
Sex cancer doesn't exist.
I did it. That's so funny. I laughed so hard at that part. It's so funny.
Kate Rockwell also did this really great thing where she somehow was able to belt and sing that song with all the emotion, but not change her face.
Yeah, that's actually
she kept
super
that
impressive.
Like dead eye, super like stupid smile, and like belting this sexy song. I don't think I could do that.
It's really impressive.
Like, how did her voice have so much emotion and her eyes had no thoughts behind them?
That's why she's in that role.
Incredible.
So good.
I think all of the original Broadway cast was excellent.
Absolutely.
The only character I wasn't like overwhelmingly impressed by was Aaron Samuels, but I also feel like Aaron Samuels is kind of a dumb character. That like anyone could play that role
he's generic, generic heartthrob, so it's like
yeah.
Yeah, anybody could do that.
Anybody could do that. So not that he did a bad job. Well, but everyone else, just excellent.
I will say that, though, that actor has gone on and done quite a few. This was his Broadway debut. Mm-hmm. What was his name? Let me look it up real quick. Kyle Selig.
Uh-huh.
He's gone on. He's in Water for Elephants right now, I think. So he's in there. I believe he's the lead in Water for Elephants right now.
He was the replacement.
Right.
But he also replaced Elder Price in Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
Yep. I think he's great, too. There's nobody in this cast who I'm like, nah, the ensemble's really strong. Like I said, I really don't have a lot of bad things to say about this production.
I don't either.
I will say too that on a technical aspect, I feel like personally, this is the best use I've ever seen of LED screens in a Broadway show.
So good.
So good. No.
And even when the screens aren't doing anything, like when they're just set to that brown background, it still feels like a public school.
Yeah.
And part of what's so great about that is the fact that the set is not insanely elaborate makes it feel more achievable to me
mm-hmm.
in a public high school setting.
For sure.
I don't want to blow a ton of money on a bunch of LED screens, but like they also used a bunch of flats on casters that were two-sided that could just flip mm-hmm. one way. It was very simple and effective. Mm-hmm. And
I loved the choreography as well. Of the desks on casters. It's like they're sitting this direction in their one classroom, then they just turn the desk. Whew, now they're in a different classroom with a different teacher.
Yep.
Turn the desk whew, in a different classroom with a different teacher. So smart. Just really cool. I really, really enjoyed watching it.
Yeah. The epitome of simple yet effective.
Yep. For sure. So you have way more notes on this than I do.
I do.
So you should probably lead this discussion.
Okay. Let's talk about... I would like to talk about lyric changes and my philosophies around that.
Okay, go for it.
So, in general, I know that shows change from... I know shows change from out-of-town tryouts or off-Broadway ones to Broadway generally. Like, that's the point of an out-of-town tryout, is to see what works and what doesn't and to make those edits before it goes to Broadway. Because generally, things will be captured in a more finalized form once they've reached Broadway. And then sometimes after that, even like when we go to Broadway versus what will be licensable or what appears on the cast recording, those things sometimes have minor changes. And, you know, sometimes the cast recording can't include all of the dance break because it's just not practical. So you'll get a right. shortened version yeah. or there'll be minor lyric changes in order to like better tell the story in this form. That being said, I feel like if you're going to change the lyrics... and those lyrics do not alter the plot. The changes have to be measurably better, not just different.
Okay. I'm assuming you're going to give us some examples here.
I'm going to give you some yeah. examples. So, and the reason I know this stuff is because I've paid very close attention to it. So I was very aware of what some of the songs sounded like when they were in DC, because there is an audio bootleg and I have listened to it. And that's what I was getting really excited about, because I thought it sounded great. And yeah, so then anyway, like, I've listened to the cast album since the day it came out. I know all of the words. I sing it all the time. This show is actually also one of the shows that made me feel like I could sing again. When I was a freshman in college, I got really sick, but I was in a show and I pushed through it and I ended up really hurting my voice and I lost a lot of what I could do. And then I like didn't know how to make my instrument do what I needed it to do. And being away from performance for such a long time, I kind of like forgot how to control my voice, but also in that time it was maturing more. So by the time this was coming out and I was like 25, and this is a cast album that has like 5 female leads that all belt in different styles, mm-hmm. It helped me like rediscover what my voice is capable of doing, and it made me feel much more confident in my belting abilities. So thank you, original Broadway cast of Mean Girls. Anyway, so I know all the words. And sometimes the lyrics have been changed, like from the cast recording to what I saw on tour was different. And the, like, one of the big examples, it happens a bunch in the song It Roars. The very beginning of the song, for example, original Broadway cast recording, she sings, "I'm 16, living in paradise with the lions and birds and stuff, but I'm 16 and it's not enough." On tour, she sang, "I'm 16, living in paradise with just animals for friends. But today, my life in Kenya ends."
Hmm.
What's the point of that?
It's the same. It conveys the same point. It's just different lyrically.
It's the same thing with, like, different words. I don't think the new words are better. They're just different. And, in fact, maybe they're even worse. Because for her to say, "I'm 16 and it's not enough."
Mm-hmm.
There's your "I want" song, baby. Katie wants more for her life, and she's excited to go to America, which is true,
mm-hmm.
as we find out later in the song. But in this tour version, for her to be like, "I'm so sad to be leaving Africa," but actually she's really excited.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, for her to be sad about leaving Africa, and then she goes on to sing about how she's like saying goodbye to all her animal friends. But then that stuff doesn't matter in long term. So I'm not sure why changes like that were made.
Yeah.
To me, it's just frustrating because it doesn't change the plot at all.
No, it doesn't.
And
yeah,
I don't know
why that would be.
There were a bunch of little things like that that makes me wonder what was happening in the writing room as they were getting ready to go on tour. There were other changes that didn't bother me. Like on tour, Aaron Samuels was played by a black actor.
Mm-hmm.
And so they changed the line. It was in "Stupid with Love." In the original Broadway cast recording, she sings something about him having swoopy hair, and they changed the words to like "dreamy eyes" or something else that would more accurately represent any person regardless of race.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, whatever. And then the part where Regina is, I think it's at the, is it the Halloween party? No, it's after the Halloween party, where she's like, "Katie, tell him his hair looks sexy, pushed back."
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do that because he had like short curly hair. So they're like, "Does he have blue eyes or green eyes? Or does he have green eyes or gray eyes?" Like, they changed it to be about something else.
Hmm.
That didn't bother me at all, because that better reflects the actor that's on stage, or any
sure.
actor that's on stage.
Right.
So to be like, to change words about it, whether you're excited about leaving Kenya or not, or to be like lions and birds and stuff, or just animals for friends.
That didn't. Yeah, that's a lyric change that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Right. To me, it's just distracting.
Yeah.
As I guess, am I a super fan of Mean Girls? It's just distracting.
Right.
So stuff like that happened a bunch on that I saw on the tour. And I don't understand why. So I'd be curious to know more about why those changes were made, because I didn't think they were necessary and it didn't impact anything.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are other line changes, and I'm enraged at this choice still. And it's been 6 years and I'm still mad about it. And that's "Revenge Party."
Okay.
Okay. So in DC, and this was the song I was the most excited about. I was like, this is going to be a musical theater anthem forever. Everyone's going to know this song in 20 years when I've got students who are singing songs in the green room getting ready for a show. Like, this is going to be one of those big musical theater songs on everyone's playlist. It was so excited. And Revenge Party is the part in the show where Katie decides to team up with Janice and Damien to, like, get revenge on Regina.
Mm-hmm.
So in DC, in the, like, the bridge part of the song, for lack of a better term, it's like the third or fourth verse, the tone changes a little bit, and Janice actually sings this part, and she basically sings what happened where Regina accused Janice of being a lesbian and said, you can't come to my pool party, there'll be girls in bathing suits, and, like, the fallout of that.
Mm-hmm.
On Broadway, it's all sung by Katie, and it's about Aaron. So the part where Katie sings, I can't even watch as she touches his hair, and I've watched a snake eat a cow.
Mm-hmm.
Regina needs to be toppled. I'm sorry, Gretchen. I swear we'll get our party now. So in the Broadway version, this is about two mean girls, Katie and Regina, fighting over a boy.
Mm-hmm.
DC, it was about two girls, Katie and Janice, who are teaming up to get revenge on the mean girl, Regina, in the name of girls supporting each other and them being friends. Because in the DC version, the lyrics are, Regina's party and everyone went, everyone except me. And then that Monday, some bitch scratched Dyke on my locker with a key. Janice sings that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Katie sings, that may be the worst thing that I've ever heard, and I watched a snake eat a cow. Regina needs to be toppled. Janice, you have my word. We'll get our party now. So to me, it's so frustrating that this movie, which is ultimately about a girl supporting each other,
mm-hmm.
slashed that undertone in favor of, well, I wish I were dating this boy.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice.
I was like, you changed the whole undertone, because that's the whole point of this, is that Katie's choosing to be Janice's friend in this moment. She's choosing to make
right.
this choice to
right.
to overthrow Regina. And it's really funny. I was looking up, so I looked up the movie version, because that's my favorite song from the show, and I still think the DC version was better.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked up the movie version, and while I was trying to look up the lyrics, I found an article. Let me see if I can find it again. Apparently, people were complaining about the movie version because they changed the lyrics. And they actually changed the lyrics back from one of the other verses. They changed it back to a DC version.
Oh.
Which I am excited about. But apparently people were complaining about it. And Tina Fey was like, get over it.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
So one of the earlier versions in the it's slightly different from the one that I remember. So I know it underwent changes in DC. In the movie, let me find it. One of the verses is, it's Janice and Damien singing, I'll bring the glow sticks, I'll bring balloons, and we'll have chocolate ice cream cones. I'll be the DJ spinning the tunes on a turntable made of her bones. We'll get a pinata, because that would be fun, and play dress up in Barbies and tag, and we'll roll in the grass and stare up at the sun, and we'll stuff her remains in a bag and throw them in the river. And that is very similar to what was in the DC, the very first DC bootleg that I heard, which mm-hmm. I can't find anymore. But I remember thinking, like, these lyrics are so perfect for these characters. It's so funny. And they changed that on Broadway.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because the, let me see if I can find the Broadway lyrics. Yeah, they just, actually, so that in the Broadway cast recording, they cut some of the verses and just included dialogue, like there's little interstitial scenes.
Right, right.
And so they just skip that to be like, it's a revenge party, a party that ends with entrails all over the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole thing about they're like going to saw her in half.
Yeah.
And like stuff her remains in a bag.
Yeah.
And then there's entrails all over the lawn. Like it's in the original version, there's all of these different pieces that are in there. About how they're going to like kill her and
right.
dismember.
Well,
but in a funny
about
way.
How they're going to like bring in a magic... Bring in a magic show to saw her
yeah.
in half, and hopefully this time it takes, or something like that.
Yeah, that's part of the fun. The first verse is, imagine a party with dresses and cake and singing and dancing and cake. And people are annoyed that she rhymed cake with cake, but I think that's funny.
That's
and there's a
funny.
Magic act that saws Regina in half, and this time
yeah.
it will take.
Yeah, I mean...
For Damien to be like, I'll be the DJ spinning the tunes on a turntable made for bones.
it's so
ridiculous.
Funny.
And, I mean, I guess a little graphic if you think about it too hard. But in the movie, they include that verse that was lost about, like, throwing her in a pinata and, like, stuffing her remains in a... Yeah, stuff her remains in a bag and throw them in the river of revenge.
Yeah.
Like, so good. So, I was really... I still, okay, have we talked about how much I love Barrett Wilbert Weed?
You and I have, yes, but talk about it one time, please.
Barrett Wilbert Weed and Gray Henson are perfect in this. I can't imagine another pairing. What's her face in the movie is fine.
Oh, that's Ali'i
Kalahara. She doesn't have
Moana herself.
Uh-huh. She doesn't have the bite. Yeah, Moana doesn't have the bite to be Janice Sarkeesian, in my opinion. But there's nothing wrong with her. Like, she's good. The other thing I really want to talk about is, like, how I think this will have it. I mean, it's already proven that it will have, but I think it will continue to have a very rich life in high school theater.
I would agree for sure. I mean, there's so many things about the show that are appealing to teenagers and to adults as well. I mean, it has the name recognition of, like, teens and their parents, for sure. And like we've talked about already, like, this is a classic from our time. What we would call a quote-unquote modern classic, despite the fact this movie is almost 20 years old.
It's
20 years old at this point. And every aspect of that original film is so relatable and iconic. And, like, there are other movies I have seen that emulate this one. Let me kind of rephrase that. I've seen a lot of movies that have obviously looked at Mean Girls as inspiration. The one that comes to my mind specifically, and even though I know it's based off of a older property, is Easy A. Easy A, I know, is based off of The Scarlet Letter, but it definitely has elements of Mean Girls in it. And
yeah.
I, at one point earlier today when I was watching this, I thought, you know, it's only a matter of time before they make Easy A the musical, and, like, it's going to be very similar to this. But I don't know if it'd be as successful.
I don't think Easy A has the name recognition.
I don't believe so either, but, like, I could see a musical based off of that. And yeah, it would be enough. And it be in a similar vein to Mean Girls.
Fair enough. Yeah, when I was taking notes on this, I wrote, like, subtitles as an educator. And then I wrote good things. And I was going to write a bullet point for bad things, but I couldn't actually come up with anything. I feel like you're right. It's a popular title. It's got the name recognition. And not just name recognition, but it is well loved.
For sure.
Particularly right. By millennials, but I think also by Gen Z. And I am hopeful that the movie musical from last year, last year or 2 years ago, did not destroy that. That's what I'm worried about. It's like the same way, and I don't love Cats, but Cats is like the fifth longest running musical on Broadway. There's a reason it's super popular, but everyone thinks of 2019 Cats, and they're like, Cats is horrible, it's the worst thing ever. And it's like, it's actually not the worst thing ever. There are a lot of merits to it, but this movie ruined it for you.
I mean, that's why anyone, like, just to kind of go on this tangent, anyone who mentions, like, oh, Cats is so bad, I'm like, look, if you really want to experience Cats, you either have to go physically see it in person, or an alternative would be to watch the, 1997,
like,
yeah, like pro shoot. There's a pro shoot of it. Watch that. Don't watch the 2019 movie. It is not indicative of what Cats is. And we can talk more about that when we eventually talk about Cats. But I don't feel like that the movie version of this musical has the same merit or is as hated as that version of Cats was, to where it has become like the eponymous version of the musical. If that makes sense. I think that it was successful enough on Broadway and has enough staying power that the movie version of the musical is not going to affect it that much. I think people... I feel like that it'll be kind of like a little bit of a black mark on the history of the musical, but it's not going to be... not going to affect it so negatively that this is going to be the one that people think of when they think about Mean Girls.
I'm hopeful of that too. I think timing had a lot to do with it. Cats came out in December 2019. And then if you'll remember in the spring of 2020, there was like a tiny little accident that shut everything down and we had nothing to be excited about. And Cats was like the last movie musical that happened. So we all sat in our houses and were horrified by Cats.
That's true.
But there was enough other stuff happening when the Mean Girls movie came out that I don't even know how many people know there's a Mean Girls movie.
That's the thing about it, too, is like we've talked a little bit about this at one point. I don't remember when, but how it seemed for a while that Hollywood was afraid to produce musicals because Well, I think the last one that they advertised as being, that I remember as being fully advertised as this is a musical, is The Greatest Showman. And it was a more recent one because, like, if you, like, and while there have been subsequent movie musicals after that, I mean, Cats was advertised as a musical when it came out, before it came out.
Yeah.
But Dear Evan Hansen wasn't.
Nope.
And then Mean Girls wasn't. Like, they're trying to trick you into going to see this film. And, I mean, that, to be frank, that's a shitty thing to do. And
agreed.
This is why I'm actually very excited and happy for Wicked, because it is being promoted as a musical. Everyone knows it's a musical already. And from what I'm hearing, it's doing very, very well, and I'm very happy to hear that. I think that, well, I'll say this. Do I think that Wicked is going to save movie musicals? I think that remains to be seen right now. Because it's one film. But I am more hopeful for the future of musical films. Another one I just thought of that was advertised, and I didn't know it was a musical, was Wonka.
Oh, Wonka, yeah, yeah.
Was like, I was like, well, I'm not really interested in seeing the Willy Wonka origin story anyway. I don't really care. And then when I learned later that it was a musical, I was like, well, now I'm a little more interested. If it's a musical, right. But like, it was already way out of theaters at that point in time when I had heard that. And, you know, it's nice to see a musical that's not animated. I actually prefer that. There is a musical, like, currently at time of recording, we're getting ready to go into like the holiday season. When this comes out, it'll be after the fact. But there is a movie musical that's on Netflix that's pretty good. It's a holiday musical called Jingle Jangle. And it's pretty good. It's got Keegan-Michael Key and, like, I think Forest Whitaker is in it. It's really good. That was advertised as a musical. So, like, I don't know why we're afraid to do that at all. But, I mean, Disney's going to keep cranking stuff out. It's fine, whatever. But
yeah.
I love to see these live-action movie musicals being made. And I would like for it to continue. I just don't know. Like, after Wicked, I don't know what's going to be in store for musical theater on film.
Yeah. Hopefully Wicked Part 2 is also good. And sometimes Part 2's flop, but here's hoping it's really good and it will make everyone want to make musicals again for film. So yeah, I'm hopeful that the Mean Girls movie won't really have an impact on the, like, greater population's impression of Mean Girls the musical. I also think that, again, having not seen the entire Mean Girls movie, maybe someday, students, if we were ever in a position to produce this show, would immediately go watch it and be like, okay, it's fine, like, okay, and then see what we could do on stage and be like, this is way cooler than what's in the movie, which is always my goal, to be like, we did this, like, when we did Mamma Mia, I feel like we did this in a way that was better than the movie in some instances.
I would agree.
Not that our kids were necessarily more talented
Meryl
than, like, Hollywood stars, but just, yeah. I mean, our daughter was pretty good.
I mean,
I don't particularly love Meryl Streep's voice, but, like, our kids were, I think our kids are great. I don't think they're necessarily going to make all of the, like, mature acting choices of a seasoned performer. But I also think that there are times where the thing that was on stage needed to be changed to better fit the medium that is film. And sometimes the stage thing is just better. So it is always fun to notice kids being like, I like this better. Because usually I'm like, thanks, me too. other reasons that I think this is really great from an educational theater perspective is the ensemble cast. There are lots of leads and many of them are girls, which checks a lot of boxes for us in educational theater. I mean, you have Katie, Regina, Gretchen, Karen, Janice, who are, I guess, not classified by awards. Like, at the Tony Awards, they wouldn't have all been classified as leads. Some of them would have been considered supporting. But for me, those are basically five equal characters in the work that they're doing on stage. Minus the fact that Regina's vocal demands are way harder than
It's obvious to me that Katie is the main character of the story. But they all have at least one solo each, and they sing together a lot, and so it makes sense. Like, I mean, if you want to say that the leads in the show would be them plus Damien. I think right. that'd be the definition of who are the leads of the show. That's the leads.
Yes.
Because Aaron's not really a lead. He's
Aaron's definitely mm-hmm. supporting character, although I would classify him as a principal role.
Oh, yeah.
And you put whatever like dumb heartthrob who can sing
right.
a little bit in that
yeah.
role. Sorry, future dumb heartthrob in that role.
I mean, yes, I would agree with that. He's obviously a principal. Like the principal characters are like him, Mr. Duval, and then any of the characters who play a mom. And they're all played by Carrie Butler in the original production, but you could break that apart into multiple roles. Yeah,
I would split them for sure. Yeah. So like your supporting cast is like Aaron, and then like Katie's mom, Regina's mom, Miss Norberry,
Mr. Duval,
Katie's dad, the mm-hmm. principal Duval,
mm-hmm.
the gym coach.
But even all of those characters can be played by ensemble members, somewhat.
Right.
At least.
Right.
Well the gym teacher can, for sure. I think.
Yes. Well, and I think there's doubling. I don't know who the dad doubles.
I think
if he's just in the ensemble.
I don't know. It was interesting. I will say, though, that watching the original production, that it was funny to me that her dad was doubled by a member of the ensemble, but her mom was played by Carrie Butler.
By Carrie Butler, yeah.
I thought that was interesting. Because there's not a, like, I mean, obviously everyone in the original production is an adult playing a high schooler, except for the adults that are playing adults. But as far as, like, adult roles, there's only a handful of them.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else yeah. is a teenager.
So, lots of roles. And the ensemble does a lot of work mm-hmm. in the show. And there's a lot of variety
yes.
in the work that they do. Like, they are wearing Lion King style
at
puppets.
At one point, yeah.
At
yeah,
the beginning
in Africa,
of the show.
In Kenya.
And then they're doing, like, musical theater. Do we want to call it musical theater? Hip-hop? It's, like, more contemporary. Like, it's
yeah.
inspired
yeah,
by
yeah.
that. Kind of.
Oh, that character's really fun too.
And
the head of the math club or math elites. He's really funny.
Oh
yeah,
Kevin G.
Really
that's I forgot. That's a great role, and he sings.
He does
a bunch
yeah.
too.
And if you don't have a strong singer, he raps mostly. So that's
yep.
also fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that's going on that the ensemble does, which is always very visually interesting. And some of that's Casey mm-hmm. Nicola, but
right.
Like there's a lot of work that can be done by the ensemble, which is also something that's great. We've talked about this a little bit already, but the set design I think is super accessible for high school
yeah,
groups.
Yeah, for sure.
This is not like 2016 She Loves Me, where you're like, well, I want to do this show, but it'll never look
right,
this good.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of LED screens, and then they bring on a couple of flats, or they bring on the lunch tables or desks or whatever it is, and it makes me feel like we could do it at the high school level and achieve something that looks pretty good, especially when you're comparing it to
yeah,
Broadway.
I feel like that while there are a lot of location, it's not very technically demanding as far as like what you actually need to represent these locations. And I mean, if you have access to a projector, that's great, but you don't mm-hmm. really need it. You know, like, cause I think about like our production of Cinderella, where we had specific locations, and granted we had some pretty grand set pieces in our production, but you uh-huh. actually don't need that much to convey a specific location, like even more stripped down than what we had for Cinderella. You know, I mean, obviously if you're just listening to this, you have no idea what I'm talking about, like specifically, because you probably haven't seen our production of Cinderella. However, it's just,
who are we kidding? People who are listening to this are probably the people who saw Cinderella.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, to be honest, all seven regular subscribers.
And one of them is me.
Yeah. And one of them is me. So five of our subscribers over there.
Your parents, my in-laws, and three of our
probably,
students.
Yeah. But that being said, it's deceptively simple in the design of this set. Because what we see in Broadway is primarily LED screens with some moving set pieces. If you just omit those, then just moving set pieces and you're fine. You can do the same mm-hmm. thing with drops. You can do the same thing with just, you know, just mobile set pieces that move around and flip around and do all kinds of stuff. You don't have to do a lot of the stuff that they do, that you don't have to execute it in that way.
Right. And I don't feel like we would lose too much by not having a huge LED screen
mm-hmm.
wall. I think even if we had a couple of small ones, on each side, you could still do a lot of the things they do where they show all the social media mm-hmm. posts and like everything flashes pink for the plastics. Like you could do those things to a smaller scale and it would still be really effective.
For sure.
So what I'm thinking now is that I should have picked Mean Girls instead of Addams Family this year.
It's okay.
it's fine. The other thing that's really awesome about this, and this is from the moment they announced the show would be available to high schools, is that there are like 1,000 alternate lines available. I actually pulled the document. There are 6 Oof. Pages that they published. Okay. It's a 6-page document from MTI that you don't have to even like pay for a perusal or anything. You can just click it and see all of it. There's a letter from Tina Fey in there about like why they made these lines available. And then there's 4 pages of alternates. So it tells you the line that's listed in the script and then something else. And sometimes multiple alternates that are available for that line. And that's without having to ask for any line changes. Which is really great because I know some of these lines would make our principal laugh and then he would
yeah,
say no.
Yeah, for sure.
Which has happened before. So like... They replace the word bitch a lot. The word bitch is in the script a lot and they replace it with like freak or dork or creep or perv. Like those are all options. There's a line on page 7, apparently it's take your top off. Mm-hmm. Like you have the option to just cut it completely. The first instance says it's when they were like, don't sit there. She mm-hmm. saves this for her boyfriend. And she's like, can I just sit here for today? And the girl responds, not unless you're going to tickle my back, bitch. And the option is, it says replace bitch with freak, dork, creep, or perv. And then, the scene with the gym coach was like, welcome to health. We're doing STDs. And then in the spring, we do condoms and choking. And you can either cut that part or change it to, we do self-esteem and choking. And then like lyric changes in Where Do You Belong? Like here's the sexually active band geeks. You can change to here's the hormonally
that's
active
funny.
Band geeks.
I feel like that's actually funnier.
If you like blowing and fingering is changed to, and I know they changed this because they used this on TV when they performed it. Like I think they performed this song
at
the Tony Awards. They changed it to, and if you like marching with tromboners.
Yeah.
So there's, and it's 4 pages of this. So there's lots of stuff. It would be awesome if I were pitching this to an administrator or the administration team that I have to pitch mm-hmm. it to and say like, here's a bunch of things that we can already change. So you don't have to be nervous. I think there's still some things they probably would have problems with. Like the part where the Halloween party, I can't remember if it's Gretchen. I think it's Gretchen says, if you don't dress slutty, that's slut shaming us. The alternates available are, if you don't dress provocatively, that's slut-shaming us, or if you don't dress sexy, that's slut-shaming us. And I think like stuff like that, we might still have to be like, please, can we say something else?
I feel like they'd have a problem with the entirety of the song Sexy.
Probably.
But I don't know for sure. I mean,
I don't know.
That's my favorite song in this whole show. It's so funny. And watching the original cast perform it, the sexy Abe Lincoln makes me laugh so hard. That's my favorite costume in that whole scene. Oh, by the way, that reminds me, they actually changed a lyric in that song as well in the movie. Yeah. Instead of saying, the original lyrics, and for the lyrics, at least in the Broadway show, are sexy Quint from Sexy Jaws, catching sexy sharks, sexy Eleanor Roosevelt, or sexy Rosa Parks, right? In the movie, it's sexy Eleanor Roosevelt or sexy Joan of Arc. I don't know why they changed it.
I don't know either.
Another one of those things you're talking about where they made that change, but it doesn't really matter. I think sexy Rosa Parks is funnier.
I'm curious about... like maybe that's something that was made available for stage so that if you don't have the people to cast.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I feel like that's the most legitimate reason for lyric changes like that one. Because that's very specific.
Yeah. But for film, you're telling me they couldn't find someone to play Rosa Parks?
Yeah, I don't know. I have a feeling that maybe the movie uses the touring version of the show.
Maybe. I think Rosa Parks is in the tour, though. I think so. I don't remember that being a change, but I don't know. Maybe they're just erring on the side of sensitive. Yeah, maybe.
Which would also make sense.
So, yeah, that's why I think Mean Girls could be a great option someday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is. I think it would be a fun one to do.
With the right group
and
of kids.
It would have been the technically easier show to do instead of Addams Family, but it's fine.
I know. I would be interested to know what the orchestrations are like. I guess I could just look
I think it's
up.
More of a, like a rock combo thing, but there are some like some like techno-y type elements to it. Like Sexy has some kind of like more electronic beats to it. And so does Whose House Is This also has some of that electronic stuff. Like house party ones have electronic music in it.
Standard orchestration, bass drums, guitar one, guitar two, key one, key two, percussion, reed one, reed two, trombone, trumpet. Although there are resources for the high school version, which include a keyboard 3/conductor book. So I don't know. That would be my concern, would be that we would have to hire a ton of musicians.
Yeah.
Which is not. That's not a deal breaker for me. It's just like we'd have to carefully budget that. I was wondering if you Dreamcast the show.
Honestly, I think the original cast is perfect. I didn't Dreamcast anything.
Are you reading my notes?
No.
My first note is honestly OBC is perfect. So then I guess since we're not really going to Dreamcast the show, my question for you would be, like, how would you, if you were in high school doing the show, how would you have been cast in the show versus, like, what role you would have wanted to play? And knowing that your choices here are more limited than mine.
I will say this. I feel like thinking about my high school self in a production like this, I probably would have been cast in the ensemble or potentially as Aaron. I don't know. However, I think I really would have wanted to play Damien. I think
really?
So. It's so fun. His part is so funny. I would do it now if I could. I'd go play Damien. It's really, really funny.
I do think it's really fun when Damien is played by like the Gray Henson type. Like he's not a he's not a twink by any means. He's like he's a big guy. Like big and broad. Yeah. I think that's funnier to have a big gay guy. And I think the guy in the movie also nails it.
I don't know who's
it.
In the movie.
I liked him a lot. It is, I'm afraid I'm going to mispronounce his name, Daniel Franzese.
Yeah.
I liked him a lot. Just in Revenge Party, that's all I saw, but I liked him. Where are my notes again? Okay, sorry. Keep going.
I was just saying that like something else I really appreciate about this show too, because like if you watch the OBC or you watch the movie or if you saw it on tour, race is not important to any of these characters. You can cast whoever you want to. And that's something else I think is very beneficial for high schools as well. Because it really doesn't matter who's who.
Yeah, I think probably people are looking for Regina to be in a blonde wig. And I think there is a line in there like her hair's not really
blonde.
It's her natural color is dark
it's
blonde.
Funny.
So like, yeah, sure, like put whoever in a blonde wig and like you put the plastics in pink and we'll all know who they are. I do like that. It's not really actually I think Katie has to be white. Is that in the play too? Like if you're from Africa, why
I don't
are you
remember
white?
That
That's a line in the movie, but I can't remember if that's in the stage show.
The stage
like, God, Karen, you can't just ask people why they're white.
You just reminded me another one of my favorite lines from Karen. It's like, have you ever touched a tiger? Like, no, tigers live in Asia. It's like, that's an Asian dream.
That's one of my life
is to not touch a tiger. It's like, it's so stupid, but it's so funny.
Yeah. My name is Karen. I may not be smart. That's it.
I will say, like, it's like I was gonna say this as well. That if I woke up as a teenage girl, I'd really want to play Karen. It's so funny. That part is so good. But yeah, I think if I were in high school, I really would have wanted to play Damien. Why does that surprise you?
You're not, I'm having a hard time imagining you playing too gay to function. Sorry, almost too gay to function.
Well, it's funny you mention that because I've while I am a cis white male and I am married with two children, I have been told multiple times by my wife that I probably shake my hips better than she does. And I find that very funny. Or like you do that, like, or like the model, like runway walk. She's like, you do that better than me. And I don't know how to feel about that. And I'm like, okay, cool. Thanks.
Well, that's because you're kind of a dancer.
I took dance for a while. So I just kind of have those movements and I'm not afraid. I'm secure enough in my masculinity to act very gay and be fine with it.
Right. But I've never seen that. You're not the type, like, you are definitely straight, but you are not the type to be like aggressively straight. You're not like an obnoxious man.
Thank
usually.
You. I'll take that as a compliment.
You do sometimes mansplain.
Yes, but I don't mean to. Yeah.
Not in an aggressive, masculine kind of way.
I think that comes with being a technician.
And I think if you shaved your face, you could pass for early 20s, which is how old most of the people
right.
do the show
yeah.
are.
And that's something that I've thought about as well. Is that like, if I shave my face, I look young enough. Yeah. Which my wife hates, by the way. She's like, you look younger than me. And I'm like,
you do look like a baby when you shave your face.
I'm very aware.
I'm with her. You can keep the beard.
It's a blessing and a curse.
I've been trying to grow a beard for almost 32 years now.
It'll happen when you're like 80. So what about you then?
So, first of all, I'm very happy that this show exists for teenagers, particularly teenage girls, because when I was a teenage theater girl, I felt like most of the shows I had the opportunity to do, there were like 4 to 6 male leads and like maybe 2 or 3 female leads. And there were twice as many girls as boys. So like twice as many girls are competing for half as many parts. And while in my tiny high school program, I did get leads more than once. That was a tiny high school program. If I'd been competing at a school like where we teach at now, I never would have gotten a lead role. I don't think I would have been good enough. So I'm really glad that shows like this and like Legally Blonde and Heathers and the shows that kids are excited about and have lots of female roles exist. Because the choices for me, even in college, like when we talk about girl heavy shows, we're like Quilters, Smile, like no one cares about any of those shows. So I'm excited for them. But I'm also incredibly jealous because by the time this show was coming out, I was already like on the verge of being too old to be in it. And now I think probably I am at almost 32. But, you know, if anyone wants to do a Mean Girls production with 30-year-olds, please hit me up so I can be in it. I really love the entire role, like, of Janice. That's the role I would have wanted to play in high school. And I also love Regina's songs. I could not have sung them in high school. I didn't have the belting ability. I can now, and it's fun. but, like, who cares? And I also don't think I would have had the confidence in high school to play Regina George. I was very shy and self-conscious, so I don't think I could have played that role. I probably would have been cast as a Katie type. Mm-hmm. I got cast as the ingenue a lot. Also a fun role. That role was, like, thinking about as an adult in real life, like, my vocal journey. Katie's got a very, or Erica Henningsen, has a very Disney princess kind of sound. And that mixy Disney princess sound sits really well in my voice. So that was one of the first songs I started singing. Be like, oh, I can sing high notes and it comes easy to me again. So that role probably is where I would have been cast at the time when I was the right age. As an adult now, I would love to play that adult female track of like Katie's mom, Regina's mom, Miss Norberry. I think that'd be super fun. Because Regina's mom is filthy in all the best
that's
ways.
That's true, yeah.
Like with the dog puppet that's like eating her boob at one point.
This is very funny.
Carrie Butler's so funny and I want to be her when I grow up. So I think that would be fun. So Mean Girls isn't 100% out of reach for me. As an adult, if anyone wants to do Mean Girls in our area, I'll play any of the adults or the ensemble or anyone.
I were to audition for Mean Girls now, I probably would be cast as an older male, and that would be fine. I'd be fine with that. But I would definitely consider shaving my face just for the audition to see how young I can look versus how old I currently look. Even now, I don't think I look as old as I am, which is beneficial for me.
That's true. Our students usually think I'm older than you, and I'm four years younger than you.
It's just because they can't. I don't let them get close enough to me to see the gray hairs in my beard. I just like.
You're also like a little more goofy than I am to them. When I guess we've talked about how we co-teach a class, right? When our students get to know us and we're like building a show and we're in tech theater when we're working in the shop and like constructing sets and things, you are more fun than
correct.
Me. So I think that gives them the idea that I'm older than
you.
Yeah,
that is, I mean, that's why I feel like part of the reason why, like, just to brag a little bit, why our tech program has grown so much is because I try to make it fun in class. And while there has definitely been a concerted effort on all of our parts to build our theater program, especially back up from what we lost in 2020, I feel very proud of the fact that our tech program has exploded. And I feel like part of that reason is on my part, about some of it is also on the part of everyone else who has helped with that program. I don't take all the credit for that, and I wouldn't, you know, and I have to, you know, I feel like theater education is just so important. One of the biggest benefits of taking a standard theater class is the opportunity that students have to learn how to interact with each other. And I feel like in tech, you still get that, though it's to a different level, because you have to learn how to work with each other to create something. And while it is more backstage and not on stage, the way that we always talk about theater is like how collaborative it is. It is the most collaborative art form that you can be a part of. And that goes for tech as well, because if everything doesn't run like clockwork the way it's supposed to, it can be incredibly detrimental to a production. And I feel like that's something that we've done a good job of hammering home with them, whether it's, you know, running the light board or the sound board, or just, you know, showing up on time and helping build and paint and doing all the other aspects that we require of them to do. I'm very proud of where we are and where we've wound up in overall. Yeah. And shows like this one get the kids really excited to work on them. And I think that is another reason why I would be very happy to work on this show, and why I'm happy to work on our current production, because like the kids are very excited to be a part of it. And that is like, you know, I'm very much looking forward to it this year, and you know, are any shows that we work on in the future.
And also, you're the fun teacher who makes the class playlist and does the Cupid shuffle with the kids backstage. And
that's
I'm
also
not,
true.
So
you're so serious all the time.
I have to be serious as the director. And as the person who actually grades assignments.
Right.
Since you're not
I'm not officially
the teacher.
I'm just a helper.
Yeah. Okay, so that brings us to ratings.
All right. You want me to go first, or you want to go first?
Okay. You go first.
So, taking into consideration all of the aspects that we've talked about, where the music is really, really great, like it's got the name recognition, it's got all that stuff, and just the quality of the show overall. I mean, it is a Tony nominated show. You know, it didn't win any, but it was nominated for 12, and that's
times.
Really impressive. That tells you that it has to be very good. And so I think overall, I think I would give Mean Girls an 8 out of 10.
Okay. For me, I just love Mean Girls as a property. This is one of those things that I guess people don't expect me to love, but I do love. Sometimes I like fun stuff, y'all. I think it's a great adaptation of a film. The translation from screen to stage could not have been better, I don't think. It's great. Minus like a couple of weird moments in the track list where the girl power songs don't really feel 100% genuine. I really like everything about this. So for me, this is a 9 out of 10.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think for the same reasons that you've listed is why I kind of knocked it down a couple pegs for me. because like I don't you and I have talked about there is at least one perfect musical out there that we've both seen. And this does get very close to that, I feel like. Though the two songs that you mentioned, Fearless and I See Stars, kind of knock it down a bit for me. So that's why I feel like where I landed on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how to fix those.
Write better songs.
I also can't write better songs. I don't know how to fix them to be better, and I can't really think of anything specifically about them. I can't pinpoint why they don't feel as good as the other ones. Just something feels like just not quite right, and maybe it's because it's a bunch of adults writing for teenagers, but that's how lots of things are. So I'm not mad at it for that. And maybe there's a little bit of nostalgia goggles. But I really like this. I think for contemporary musical theater, this is way up there for me.
I'm right now, I'm hard pressed to think of another modern musical that I would like more than this one. I mean, personally, I think Hamilton is probably one of my more favorite modern musicals, but I know that's basic of me. I mean, there's just not a lot of contemporary musicals I can think of that I like more than this. I think Addams Family is okay.
Really? Mm-hmm.
I do like it. Yeah. I don't know if I like it more than
Mean
Girls.
You're just mad that it has 14 locations.
I don't think I like it more than Mean Girls. I do like Addams Family, but I just feel like I like Mean Girls more.
Okay. That's fair. Right.
You want me to do the outro?
I guess so.
All right.
What is this?
Short one for us.
Short little episode.
Well, that's going to be curtains for us here at The Greatest Show Pod. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like the show, our show, little podcast here, please give us a rating and review us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcast. If there's something you would love to talk to us about or you have comments on this show, just send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com. And you could find us on all the social media platforms at Greatest Show Pod.
That's the end of season 2.
Woo!
2 seasons down, a million to go.
Let's hope so.
So we'll be taking a little break here because we're busy with our spring musical.
Right, we've got
by the time you hear this,
we've got our own musicals to work on. So again, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you if you're listening to this.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Yeah, we just like doing this little thing, so it's cool if anyone else likes it.
Definitely.
And we'll see you in 2025.
We see you. We'll see you for season 3. In 2025.
Yeah, well, we will start recording probably summer 2025. So if you have a show you want us to cover, we've not yet picked season 3.
Yeah.
And I'm open to suggestions. So,
girl, same.
TheGreatestShowPodcast@gmail.com.
Or GreatestShowPod on Instagram, Threads, Twitter, wherever.
Yeah. Your obscure musicals. That's what I'm looking for.
All of the obscure
musicals.
Some
good obscure stuff. Or stuff that you think we will both hate, because I think those are our best episodes.
And literally, if it's anything you think is good, I'm sure Emily will hate it.
I liked this one.
You did. That is true. It's the Greatest Show, Man. It's produced by Brantley Wheeler and Emily Chavone. Our theme song is by the incredibly talented Patrick Duffy. Links to all his social media in the episode description. You can find us on all the socials at Greatest Show Pod. Tweet at Emily and tell her why her opinions are bad and she should feel bad. If you have any suggestions for a musical we should cover in the future, send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. My name is Regina George, and I am a massive deal. I don't care who you are. All right, that's enough.